All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Got a lot of ground to cover today. We're about to get into November, which is really exciting. We got some whitetail Q&A submissions that we're going to get right into right here off the bat. And then we're going to be talking about some feed tree hunting and some things that me and Jacob have been doing here lately. Oh, I can't talk. Jacob, how are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Haven't misspoke quite yet, so, you know.
I know.
Doing pretty good.
Came in a little hot and didn't work out for me. So one thing I want to get out of the way before we do the Q&As is we just did our episode with Jody Mesh.
Oh, okay.
And I just wanted to throw it out there, guys. This is our time of year. It's the hunting season, and we try to save a lot of our best episodes for this stretch that we're getting into right now. So we've got a bunch of really good ones lined up. If you enjoyed the episodes with Bobby Worthington, if you enjoyed the ones with Carl Miller and Brian Murphy, if you enjoyed the one with Jody or anybody else that we've had on, Jordan Jones, we got a couple other biologists coming up here soon. If you enjoy any of them, make sure you share it with your buddies. Go share it on social media. Go share it in Facebook groups. Go share it on your Instagram story. Text it to your friends. Go share the show. It's going to help us a ton. You got anything to add there? I just wanted to throw that out because...
As Andy Frisella would say, don't be a share the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Some people get that reference. The other thing is grunt calls. So we announced the grunt calls that we came out with last Thursday on the show. And the show, so we scheduled a show out, and it, you know, it drops in the middle of the night. But, you know, most people start listening about 6, 7 a.m. on the drive to work, and it sold out by 7:30 a.m. So I'm going to let y'all in on a little something here about the grunt calls. On Tuesday, they launched on Patreon. On Wednesday, they launched on our newsletter. And then on Thursday, they launched on the regular show here on YouTube and on the audio feed. So if you aren't on Patreon or if you aren't on our newsletter, then you missed the first two waves. And that's one reason they sold out so fast because, dude, Patreon, I mean, they took care of them suckers. They bought a bunch of them. We got a bunch of people asking about doing another run. We are doing another run. We expect them to be ready within the next 2 weeks. So be watching for that. And I say that to say that if you missed out on your grunt call last time, they're probably going to sell out really, really quickly again. Either go join Patreon. We've got you can actually join Patreon for free. But there's you know, a $5 tier you can get in on. And not only does that give you access to these early deals, but it also gives you access to our Zoom rooms that we do, as well as early access to podcasts. I dropped a early access today that people are eating up. So there's that. Or on the newsletter, they always get a deal when these grunt calls or hats or hoodies or anything come out. They get a discount and they get first dibs after Patreon. So get on one of those and you're going to get to see when these grunt calls launch before everybody else and hopefully get your hands on one before they sell out again.
Yeah, by the way, you can sign up for the email list or just for the newsletter just by going to our website, thesouthernoutdoorsman.com. The first prompt, right when you go to it, is going to come up talking about subscribing to the Woodsman Wire newsletter. Just put your email in, and again, you'll get notification as well of any of these new drops or anything else we got coming up.
Yeah, and this run of grunt calls is going to be the last one, so y'all better go get them, son.
I'm sorry if we get anybody mad. Just be there first if you want.
Be there or be square.
By the way, I went back and actually listened to last Thursday's episode.
Oh, that sounds so good.
But yeah, because like I remember doing it and like, you know, get the headphones on, but like I went back and listened to it because someone was like, dude, that grunt call sounds amazing. I'm like, I know it does, but I'm like, let me go see how it sounded on the podcast. And I'm like, dude, if I was a big buck, I'd come right
in. Dude,
it
sounded great. Yeah, when I was editing it, I was like, daggum, that sounds a lot better than I thought it would through the headset mic.
Yep.
So, all right. We're going to get to some whitetail Q&As now.
Also, real quick, by the way, this Thursday tonight, if you're listening to this on Thursday, we have our weekly Hunters Hangout Zoom meeting on Patreon. Again, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and then it rotates every other week. It goes Thursdays to Tuesdays, so we have different Patreon members to be able to hop on that have different schedules. But this week, it's on Thursday, 7 p.m., and then next week, literally like in 5 days from Thursday, I think that's right. Friday, Saturday, yeah, 5 days. We have our Tuesday Hunters Hangout meeting. So Tuesdays, Thursdays.
Man, these two aren't timed very good. They both fall on something else.
Yeah, I mean,
Halloween and election night.
That's true. We might have, actually, we'll probably have to adjust the Tuesday night one.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we'll make some adjustments.
Yeah, I don't know if we can do that. I don't know.
Halloween. I mean, if you got little kids, if you're a grown adult going out for Halloween,
I'll catch y'all.
I'm not a big. Listen, I get it. If your girl's like, hey, we got a Halloween party to go to, but if you're aren't in that situation, you're like doing a lot of stuff for Halloween, I'm just.
You tell me you're not going out of town for Halloween.
No.
You're not going to go trick or treating.
No. Got zero plans. Just as intended. So yeah. If you got kids, though, it's a different story.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to be on Thursday, by the way. I got a kid.
What are you all dressing up as? Like a s'more or something?
A s'more.
Should be like a cute little s'more.
No, I think Piper's going to be a cow, and we're going to be farmers.
I mean, a calf? She ain't a cow. She's a calf.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know.
And you're going to be farmers?
Yeah, I think we're going to be farmers. God. Hey, it works out good for me because I don't like getting dressed up. And if I'm going to be a farmer, I can just basically wear what I normally wear.
You're playing
wear.
Into that Central Alabama stereotype.
Of course I am.
I mean.
Because it requires me to do the least amount of dressing up possible.
The real question, is she going to be a Black Angus? What kind of cow is she going to be?
Oh, I don't know. Whatever the cheapest cow costume on Amazon is.
Should be some dairy cow.
All right. That's enough of all that nonsense. All right, this is our first question. It is from Robert Beard from the great state of Alabama. He said, I have property on the Warrior River and the banks are high wall bluffs. From your experience, do deer use the river pre-rut and during rut, or how do deer use the river pre-rut and during rut? This is a very interesting subject. I'm trying to think off the top of my head if we've had anybody who's like really keyed in on that specifically. I don't know if you have any guests that kind of come to mind, but I look at rivers as, especially in the area that you're at, as big giant highways for the deer. It's a natural travel corridor that animals can use, whether it be deer or really anything else, where they can actually run that river and you're probably going to get deer from a much different area, like a lot of deer that you've never seen before that come from that river. So I would be interested to see if you've got high wall bluffs on your property, if there's somewhere where that bluff ends on your property, and look for a potential river crossing right there. Even though the Warrior River is a pretty big river, deer will swim that, but they're not going to swim right into a bluff. You know, if you can find the end of that bluff, it's really the same as like a bluff gap elsewhere. And I would start looking there. Not necessarily to hunt it, but I would really look for that as a trail camera location, especially if you have, let's say you have, a bluffed out riverbank, and then you've got a little holler coming off your place, little creek drainage or whatever, hitting the river. That is what I would look for. What are you talking about?
You said holler. I was like, Wes Moby's screaming, why is he saying SMZ? Sorry. So sidetracked.
Man, he derailed me. I would look for a scrape or something right there, but that's how I would view it. What would you say?
I mean, if you have a high wall, that's, oh gosh, well, I don't know the episode number. Let me think. It is Doug White or PK, Palmetto Kid. He's got three different names he goes by out of Florida talking about a back wall. And that would be like one of those back wall situations. Like he talked about killing deer somewhere like on a mine or some kind of area, some kind of, something that there was a way the deer cannot go unless it wants to fall to its death. And the bucks would kind of bed up in that general area and kind of leave it. And he ended up killing a pretty nice buck in that location. That's something to kind of think about. To be honest, you can just run that edge. Like where we were at on Bobby's place up yep. in Tennessee, he's got a big high wall bluff that runs that property. And it's like the deer, you can find spots the deer go up and down, but if it's right on the riverbank, I don't really see that being like something I'd necessarily key in on. But it's like anything, you just got to get out there and scout. I've had so many guys, not to get too sidetracked, but like, man, where would you hunt on this property? And I'm like, and they're like bow hunting. I'm like, dude, I'd go scout first. Like, mm-hmm. if you're just asking like a random spot and go hunt blind. Like, I used to do that. Now, I'm not a big fan of now hunting blind. I'm kind of past that now. Like, I kind of want to lay eyes on. Now, if I've got a gun in my hand, that's a different story. I can reach out and touch one. If I'm bow hunting, I don't want to go into a lot of stuff blind unless you're just sitting there for a couple hours and then walk and find something else.
Yeah.
Going back to the high wall again.
I think you're looking for episode 388
with the back wall.
Yeah, Big Buck Behavior Patterns with Doug White. That's on the audio feed only. It's not on YouTube.
Not on YouTube. Yep, that's before YouTube's time. But anyways, The high wall is great. I would just look for compound features. I fished the Warrior River quite a bit growing up as a kid. My grandparents had a cabin out there. And we would see deer swim the river all the time. Mm-hmm. And I know what you're talking about, like with the bluffs. Like you'll get on one side of the river and you'll have big bluffs. The other side of the river might not have any bluffs. And then parts of the river will be bluffed out on both sides. I wouldn't necessarily look at the bluff itself as any kind of feature to necessarily focus on. But I would be looking for specifically, again, compounding features out there, habitat and topography, that's going to put deer in very specific locations of where they want to be concentrated at and then associate sign with that. Mm-hmm. So bluffs are cool. A bluff on a river doesn't really make a difference to me. But to me, that would just make it a lot more hard from the cross right there. So like what Andrew, what you were saying, you can find a bluff gap or find where the bluff peters out and deer can cross the river they want to. Again, something I'm probably not going to hunt that. But it might be an area you're going to find some kind of, you know, scrape in that location. That deer can kind of come check and grab some water. They can go back up an elevation or they can cross the river.
Yeah, I guess what I was trying to get at earlier is you're going to have deer coming to your property from all around because it's the rut and there's going to be a lot of newcomers, whether they're crossing the river or running up and down the river. And that's where my mind immediately goes to wanting to find intersecting paths of travel. And so that's why I'm like, okay, that bluff, they're going to walk the edge of that bluff most likely, whether they're walking right on the edge of it or 100 yards off of it or whatever. That's a hard one-sided funnel, as Bobby Worthington would say. So they're going to be walking that. And then wherever that bluff ends, you're going to have another trail that intersects right there most of the time. So that's why I would go look for that. And, you know, it's kind of like out in the plain states with the mountain lions or whatever. They use those river corridors to travel long distances.
Oh, okay. I was like, what are you talking about, dude? Start mentioning mountain lions down here. Everybody's going to start saying Black Panthers.
Dude, so. I took Tiff to a zoo. We were in San Diego a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I took her to the zoo and I took her to the mountain lions. And I was like, is that what you saw? And she was like, no. Tiffany thinks she saw a mountain lion in Alabama.
No, like, she thought she saw a Black Panther. Let's get that correct.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I was like, first of all, no, you didn't. We've been arguing about it for a couple months. So when we were at the zoo, I was like, hey, let's go look at an actual mountain lion.
Yeah, that black lab with floppy ears came running by.
That's right.
In the dark. But again, yeah, deer are going to run the rivers up and down corridor. Associating good cover along the river, again, on the bluff wall. Might have a little better opportunity, again, for deer traveling right through there. Again, all comes back down to compounding habitat edges, multiple different habitat edges coming together with some thick cover. Got to have thick cover associated with that. And then also compounding terrain features in around that. Again, ditches coming off the river, cutting up through that bluff, you know, dropping out to, you know, three or four ditches, thermal hub, kind of spreading out on the property, something like that. It's going to definitely deer going to key in on that while traveling than just the bluff wall itself.
Yep. All right, next up, we got Richard McQueen from Florida. He said, does a climbing stand make too much noise for deer? No, unless you're just loud with it.
It does. If you slam them together, listen, yeah. you take a Summit, Old Man, Climber, API, whatever, and you clank it together on accident, yeah, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. If you're climbing a tree and it's popping bark,
that's not a huge deal.
It's not. I mean, unless it is a super calm day, There's very little breeze, and you are tight to what you think is bedding, like within 100 yards, maybe 150, but really 100 yards or less. You know, maybe it could be a little loud, especially climbing a pine tree, or especially like one of the worst trees to climb, like a shagbark hickory. Terrible, super loud, terrible tree to climb. But if you got to climb it, you got to climb it. Yeah, maybe. But the thing is, if you've ever been out in the woods, especially, you know, gray squirrels are one thing, but if you got big fox squirrels running around like we have in deep south, well, again, a lot of river systems have them. Those start chasing each other because I've seen a bunch of them this past week, and we're going to talk about this past week.
Oh, yeah.
With Greg May here. And, dude, they're running up and down the trees. They are making so much racket. It literally, to me, when you're climbing a tree like that, especially you're scraping bark, it just sounds like a squirrel going up and down the tree like crazy chasing mm-hmm. each other.
Yep.
Deer are used to that.
Yeah, I agree. If you're having issues with your climber being noisy, specifically metallic sounds, like, yeah, that's an issue. But you can fix that. You get stealth strips. You can get what is that
tape.
Like medical bandaging stuff that you could get like you would get wrapped with like a football or something. You know
yeah.
what I'm talking about? Like the self adhesive.
You know yeah, about? I mean I don't know.
It's kind of soft. That's what I always used to use, and that works really
hockey
really well.
Hockey tape.
Yeah, you can go and get it at like any store. And just wrap it around where you have metal on metal contact, and boom, it's fixed.
Yeah.
And also just go slow. You know. a lot of people talk about how fast they can get up a tree, whether it be a climber or standing sticks or a saddle and sticks or one sticking or whatever somebody's doing. But to me, the question is not how fast you can get up, it's how quietly you can get up.
No, but the real question is how fast can you get down when that bubble gut hits you? That's where rappelling is superb. Okay?
Did you have an issue last
week? No, I was just thinking, I'm like, listen, I ain't so worried about getting up fast, but if I gotta get down quick,
yeah, man,
you know, that's a big deal. So.
Dude, I burned it out of the stand this morning when I was getting. I didn't have bubble guts or anything, but I was just eager to get down. And yeah, I got a little too confident. And I hit the ground a little bit hard, but we all good. But yeah, being able to do it quietly, that's the thing, man.
Yeah.
Anything is too noisy if you're not careful.
Well, our buddy Michael Pike, he's talked about before. You know, when he's using a climber or anything like that, especially climbing like a pine or again like a white, something that's got some exposed bark, like large flake bark, not tight bark, like a water oak, it won't really do it with because it's such a tight bark tree. It doesn't really make much of any noise climbing a water oak. But like a white oak, especially a pine tree, the crunching of the bark and everything, Michael's talked about, it sounds like a buck making a rub. And he's actually had deer run into him while climbing a tree. And I've had that happen. I've never had a big buck do that, but I've had little bucks do that. I've had does come in like, oh, what is that? Like they kind of come in on a beeline, like trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a curiosity. So as long as it's not metal, you're good. Or as long as you're not, right on top of bedding and you're just making a ton of racket climbing the tree, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Today when I hunted, it was so windy that I could kind of do whatever I wanted. And dude, I shot up that tree so fast with that one stick. I mean, like I was
ka-ding! Ka-ding!
No, I didn't make any metal noise. But just, I was climbing a longleaf pine, yeah. And just the bark was, like, so loud, but it didn't matter. It was so windy. I mean, you couldn't hear anything.
You're like a big coon coming out of that tree.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it looked like. All right, last one. This is Austin from Kentucky. He said, hey, guys, I'm new to seriously hunting, like scouting and finding trails, etc. I was raised on baiting and waiting, but I've never had any real success other than a few does, and I don't really know what I'm doing other than finding hot sign and setting up on it. Would you guys ever consider a mentorship program or recommend a mentorship program to attend where a person could understand sign, places to scout, how to pattern deer, etc.? And then he said some other stuff about Kentucky. So Austin, we don't do anything like that. There are some people who offer things, most notably from a couple weeks ago, Bobby Worthington offers a in-person scouting course. I can't remember those episode numbers off the top of my head. But he does have a course where you go out on his property, kind of like we did in our scouting video from a couple weeks ago. It's the same property. You go out there and you find the same funnels that he hunts. Another thing is most state agencies have some kind of adult mentorship program. I know we have one here in Alabama. I'm sure you probably have one in Kentucky too. I don't know what it's called if you do have one. But I would reach out to your DCNR or whatever it's called, you know, your conservation like your government officials or whatever. What would you call that? For us, it's DCNR, but other people,
I say DNR. Department of National Department of Natural Resources.
Well, it's Department of Conservation and Natural Resources here. That's all the states have different names.
A lot of states do DNR.
Okay, well, whatever. Kentucky DNR, whatever it's called. If you just reach out to them directly, they probably have some kind of program. And if they don't, then I'm pretty sure the National Deer Alliance does that as well. So there's a lot of organizations out there that can help you with that, but I would definitely look into one of those things. I don't think we're going to be doing any mentorship.
No, NDA, National Deer Alliance, you probably go to their website or give them a call, and they could probably find something for you. And then also, you got to take this, you got to be careful about this, because sometimes you can get, you know, not all advice is great advice, to be 100% honest. You could go and try to network at either a local bow shop or something and try to find someone local that could kind of take you under their wing. And we've talked about this during turkey season. It's a lot easier to get somebody to come teach you stuff if you have turkeys to go hunt. Same thing for deer. If you got some access to some private land or something and you could have somebody come out there and kind of show you the ropes and kind of let them hunt a little bit, but someone that's a lot more experienced, you probably could get somewhere with that. Again, someone who can kind of show you the ropes of, you know, what they do and what they're looking for in order to be successful. We've had a lot of in the field content requests on scouting, which I've never been overly interested in. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit there and watch a scouting video, but I understand there's a need for it for some people that don't know exactly what they're looking for, the thought process while they're out there in the field. So
I think it helps to just see what it actually looks like versus hearing it talked about.
Yeah. So something we'll probably work on a little bit more in the future. I mean, kind of showcasing some of that stuff, especially if we do some of that, I'd rather do it postseason than preseason. Mm-hmm. Preseason is kind of hard to find some of that sign that's like super notable that you can really like tell, like, oh, this is it.
Yeah. So sounds like a job for February.
Yep.
Cool. All right. So that's our Q&As. You can submit those on our website. We have got a bunch of them right now in the queue. So
just start doing a couple more.
Yeah, we might have to start doing more than three every week or something like that. Figure out what we're going to be doing with these Thursday episodes. All right. So over the last week, you've been doing a little feed tree hunt, and you met up with our buddy Greg Mayhair, who was on the podcast earlier this summer talking about feed trees, and y'all just got your tails whooped.
You know, takes one to know how to gar-hole someone else, and I gar-holed us, it seemed like.
You gar-holed Greg?
I mean, that's what Greg said. That's what he said in the group message to everybody. He's like, Jake took me to the worst place in Alabama to go hunt. He's like, based off other responses, because I had a listener reach out to us where we were hunting, and he's like, yeah, I would not go there right now.
Really?
He's like, I'd go to somewhere else. But me and Greg Mayhair went and hunted. He actually was there before me. He hunted for 2 days before I even got there.
Did he see anything?
Some does, and he might have seen a spike, but like no rack bucks. But we ended up going, and we're trying to go hunt feed trees, and that was a big emphasis that I wanted to go do and go hunt with him and really see what he's looking for, because that's kind of what
you kind of just went up there to film it.
Yeah, I mean, I had my bow in the truck, but I never took it. I just took the camera and it was filming, because what I wanted to do was showcase how he scouts for feed sign and kind of have us both mic'd up and showcase that, what good feed sign looks like, and then setting up on it and then seeing deer, killing deer on feed tree. And we really never found it. It's like some of the best feed sign we found. He even said, like, after fact, he's like, it's still not great, but it's the best thing we've got. Where, you know, we'd get to, and what we found out was there were swamp chestnut trees, which I did not realize we had swamp chestnut trees outside of like super, super South Alabama, because I've never seen them in a lot of places. At least never, I guess, paid attention to them. Maybe there's more of them. Because a lot of people come and hunt some of the areas that we hunt, and they see these mountain oaks, mountain chestnut oaks, and like, oh, man, we got swamp chestnuts. And it's not the same tree. The leaves look almost identical. Acorns look very, very similar. To me, swamp chestnuts almost are bigger, almost like more circular than elongated, like the mountain chestnuts. And the bark looks completely different. But we have a lot of mountain oaks around here. We don't have a lot of – I've never seen a swamp chestnut around here. And where we were at, we ended up getting to some. We found some white oaks, found some red oaks. A couple of red oaks were dropping. White oaks, we found maybe a couple of trees that were dropping a few acorns, but no feed sign underneath it. And the only place we found concentration, and it was also the concentration of buck sign and somewhat feed sign. As I say feed sign, the ground's not really tore up all that much, but there's droppings underneath it, fresh droppings, and there's a bunch of fresh caps, but not many acorns on the ground. Like, you found a couple that were fresh, but it was mostly just fresh caps. And that's where all the concentration of buck sign was at. Like, if you found a couple, like a string of two or three swamp chestnuts, you were going to find rubs right there, guaranteed. Except we hunted some of those spots and never saw a buck.
Dang,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
And so towards the end of the trip, y'all realized.
Oh.
What?
Ha! Oh, love it. So we were walking into this area, and I had some history hunting a little bit of this. And we were going to go back in and kind of get on this oak ridge, this little high spot that I know there's oaks back there, some white oaks. But I thought there was going to be a lot more red oaks, but there was a lot of white oaks. And we are coming in off one of the roads, and you had to walk through just a lot of thick cover, a lot of privet, and just a lot of thick cover on the way in. Well, we did that 2 days in a row, and we got back there, and we started finding some really good sign, but we wouldn't ever come back that way. We would walk out a different side of the public and have a truck parked there. And on, like, the last day, this is, like, third or fourth day I was filming him, we did it again that morning, but we didn't have a truck parked on the other side. We were going to walk back that way. And I was thinking while we were back there, because I thought the deer were going to be kind of deep in this public, but we'd walk around. I'm like, dude, we've walked for 7 hours. We haven't really jumped really any deer. We jumped a couple does, kind of down by a creek. And I'm like, I think they're in that privet thicket. I don't think they're out here. I just don't think that. I mean, there's sign here. There's rubs here, but there's like very little cover, very sporadic cover, like not great cover.
Nighttime sign.
Yeah, look. Well, yeah, looked like nighttime sign. And I'm like, I bet you they're in that privet thicket. Dude, we start walking. We're heading back. We're doing this four and a half mile loop, head back to the truck, find more fresh rubs, gigantic rubs. And we ended up jumping some deer out of this little ditch that had some briars and stuff in it. And I'm like, okay, finally seeing some deer. But then we get back over to that privet thicket, and we start like working the edge down, going back to the truck. And dude, it's just, there's tracks, there's droppings, there's gigantic rubs all along it. And I'm like, and we've been walking through. Listen, I'm telling you, I got footage. You can watch it later. Okay. I got footage of us walking through it, and Greg's mic'd up, and he's cussing. I'm pretty sure he's cussing. Dude, he was like, this is terrible. Because, you know, Greg, you know, I've been around Greg a lot. I've never been in the woods hunting with Greg.
Yeah.
Dude, Greg's a big dude. Like, Greg, I don't know how tall you are. I know this is a podcast.
You turkey hunted with him.
I know, but, like, I've never deer hunted. Dude's got his stand or his, you know, sticks and everything. Actually, I was carrying sticks. He had his platform backpack on, but he's tall. There's a benefit of walking through thick cover, I believe, if you're shorter than 6 foot. That's just my thought.
Okay? Yeah, I could see that.
Well, he is like 6'3". I don't know. Greg's tall. And, dude, he's just like going through this. Everything's hitting him in the face. Like, there's stuff hitting him in the face. It doesn't touch my head. I'm walking underneath it. And I'm like, this is great, dude. This is nothing. But, like, we were finding a sign in the mornings in the pitch black dark in that privet thicket. But never thought about, like, hunting it. And I'm like, it'd be tough to hunt bow hunt because everything's pretty tight. There's some oaks in it, but it's not great. And, but anyways, on the way back out, we found that sign, and I had to leave. And then Greg's like, dude, I'm going to hunt back in there. Because this is the interesting thing, because I was talking to Greg about this, and this might be on some of the footage, that when I've hunted early season, I've had opportunities at some big deer, specifically like in Tennessee, it was never focused on feed trees. It was always focused on habitat edges, like compounding habitat edges and sitting that. Knowing there's oaks around, but more than likely at some point deer are going to come back through. They're going to hit these edges and they're going to kind of funnel back up the bedding.
Yep.
And that's what I was telling him. That's like what I've had more encounters with than just like trying to hunt feed trees. Because I've killed a couple deer in feed trees, but again, it's never been a huge focus. Or like when I've tried, never saw anything. And I was telling him that while we were walking around, because I'm like, dude, there's some spots out here I would sit just because the edges are that good. The sign's there. There's no feed sign, but the sign's there, and like you might have a deer. Well, when we're coming back out, one of those spots was like that, where you had the corner of the public right there, that privet thicket came down, and there's oaks all around, like, outside the privet. The privet was super thick, and there's tracks coming in and out of the privet, and there's sign all right there. I'm like, dude, this looks good. He's like, this goes completely against what I normally do, but I think I'm going to come back here and just sit that spot where all those edges come together. I'm like, do it. Like, go back in there and do it. He went in there and had a little buck come out. He said he called me.
Oh, that's where he had the buck come out?
Yeah, he called me when he's coming out of the tree, and he's like, dude, he's like, man, I was sitting there, and he's like, all of a sudden, right at last night, I hear something. I look up, I see antlers coming through that privet. And he's like, he thought it was the big deer, and then it finally came out, and he's like, it was a little 4-point. He's like, I might would have shot my camera guy with me, but he was joking. He's like, nah. But had that deer come out, kind of funnel off and so on. But that's what that's kind of like what I've reverted back to, is where I've had successes in and around that kind of stuff. And he's like, I could see how that might be applicable here just because the feed sign's been so hit or miss. Like, the deer are just so sporadic. We never found any concentration. So I think we did like 11 or 12 miles and never found like any like quality food source.
Are you not going to talk about what happened that first night when we did the Zoom room?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we had our Hunter's Hangout meeting, which we mentioned earlier on Zoom for Patreon. And I told Andrew, like, hey, I need you to run it for me, at least get started. We'll be back and back to trucks probably around 7-ish, and I'll be able to hop on at 7 or right after 7. Well, we were hunting. We did that through hike, and came in from one side, was kind of working our way to the other side of the public. Hunted, saw a couple does that night, ended up slipping out, and we walked to my truck. And we were way, way, way closer to my truck than his truck. Well, what we did was we dropped off my truck that morning. I grabbed my keys. We went to his truck. And then we were going to walk in and hike my truck and drive his truck back, or drive my truck back around to his. Well, we get to my truck and we get 10 yards from the truck. And I'm like, I don't have my keys.
Oh, gosh.
And we're at my truck. And I'm like, I know, there's no even point of patting my pants. I know I left them in my shoes in his truck because I remember it that morning. I told Gray, I was like, dude, I don't have my keys. He's like, what do you mean?
Oh,
and he's like,
gosh.
I'm like, they're in your truck. He's like, you sure? I'm like, 100% sure. And then we started looking. I pull up the map. I'm like, I got nobody to call, but we got a long way to walk. And we're not walking through all that thick stuff. We're going to walk all the way around it. We're going to take a road all the way. And, yeah, and we started walking and got on the Zoom call. We were on that for about, I don't know, 45 minutes or something as we were walking as fast as we could before jogging. And Greg's got longer legs than me, so Greg had to slow down and kind of keep up with my pace.
How many miles did you think did you have to walk?
A few.
A couple?
Yeah.
What, like, we're talking like 4 or 5?
No, no, not that much. Not that much. Probably, I thought it was a mile and a half. I think it was like right at 2-ish or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not going to be that bad, but still, like, just walking. We were walking like 3 miles an hour, so it took us like 40 minutes to get there, 45 minutes, 40 minutes. It made it really interesting, to say the least, and that was the beginning of the end. that happened on the first full night we hunted. The first full day we hunted, we were out there for like 14 hours straight. So, good way to end that day of the hunt.
So that was kind of your whole trip then.
Yeah, like, yeah, pretty much. I mean, just slept in the truck. Greg had his new rig, which is pretty cool. Last time he hunted with us, or hunted with me, not you, but hunted with me. actually, last two times he's had his van, and they ended up. I think he's still trying to sell the van, or maybe he already sold it. But he's got his truck. And he got one of those, I think it's called Tusca. These, like, it looks like, it's not a camper shell. It's like its own enclosed, like, little camper. It slides in the bed of your truck. It's made out of foam with, like, a hardened outer layer to it. And it locks and everything. It's pretty sweet. But anyways, he had that he was sleeping in, which was kind of cool to see. Probably a little more comfortable to sleep in the front of my truck, but I slept pretty good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was kind of unfortunate. We ended up the very last morning, or no, the very last full day I had, which was the next day, we ended up bouncing to a spot Greg had found where there were some overcup oaks. Again, never found one of those in Alabama. Actually, I have found one in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some overcups in this one spot. And he's like, man, I found feed sign in here a couple of days ago. Real heavy feed sign. He sat out one afternoon, didn't see anything. But he's like, I know the deer there, like tons of fresh droppings. Like you can smell the deer like while you're in there. And we went and hunted that morning. And it would be an awesome spot to kill a 7-man limit of fox squirrels. And we had a bunch of fox squirrels. Never saw any deer that morning before bouncing back to the other spot where we found all the rubs and everything. But no real sightings. It was crazy.
You willing to share that fox squirrel pin?
Depends on how much it'll bid for. I might have to put it on the podcast, put a bid on it, see if you're highest bidder.
Dude, Colton was texting me the other day that he wants to go squirrel hunting. He's like, hey, I got plenty of vacation if you want to like go during the week sometime. And I'm like, I'm doing the math of how far of a drive it is up there. I'm like, if there's that many fox squirrels, man, I'm a fox squirrel junkie. I love fox squirrels.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool. I mean, they're all black face, white nose fox squirrels running around.
Did you see any like silver ones?
No, they're all kind of, they're all like kind of, they're not solid red or orange. They've got that kind of grayish orange back, classic tail, and then just that black and white nose face. So nothing crazy. No black ones. I was looking for a black one. No black ones. So
yeah.
Nothing crazy diverse. But anyways, it was interesting though, kind of hunt with them and kind of see, because I mean, the first day we went in and scouted this that first spot I told Greg about, I mean, we did, I forgot what Onyx said, I think it was 6 miles that day, something like that. Did some big loops kind of working back through that area and kind of gave me an idea of a little bit more like what, because we'd come up with some stuff that I'm like, dude, I'd hunt this.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg's like, nah, he's like, we'll probably find something better. And like, we'd keep going, try to find different things. And we just never found that super hot feed sign.
Man, that's been the story of my deer season so far. Every hunt I've been on, whether it's been at the club or on some public or this recent SOA hunt, it's all been like that. Up until this morning, I haven't found a lot of trees or a lot of oaks dropping really good until literally this morning. Let's see, last week I went on that SOA hunt with a buddy of mine that drew. I got to be his guest for like half the hunt. And, man, I got down there, and I just burned the boot leather up the first day. I mean, walked pretty much all day, and I could not find an oak that was dropping decent. First of all, there wasn't many oaks on the place anyways. A lot of it's cut, or a lot of it's pines or other vegetation. And I could not, the few oaks I did find were not dropping. And a lot of the hardwoods where I thought there would be oaks were ended up being hickories. And the hickories, now they were dropping, and the pigs were eating them up. But yeah, it was a struggle. Same thing with the hunting club. Walked out there a good bit, still haven't found a great feed tree. Now, 2 days ago, Mike went out there, and he did. He found some white oaks that were just, like, absolutely raining. And he found a bunch of deer crap all over the place, like, fresh trails. And he texted me. I was actually on my way back from the SOA, and he texted me. He's like, hey, I found this spot, and it was it's got, you know, a trail, you know, wrapping around the hill and another trail coming off the hill that intersect, and there's tore up leaves and there's fresh droppings all over the place. Should I sit here or should I keep working down this edge? And I just texted back in all caps, sit there. And he didn't see anything that day, but it's been real warm lately. And I think that, I don't know, maybe it's just an excuse. I don't know. But it's just been warm, and that SOA hunt was kind of rough. There was actually a good buck that ended up being killed out there. But there wasn't a lot of deer killed. There was only a couple does killed, and I think like two bucks between. So anyways, it's just been rough. It's been like 85, 86, 87 degrees.
Still better in Arkansas. Never been dealing with 94 degrees, which I don't understand that. But yeah,
what?
This whole last week was in the 90s up there.
God.
Like y'all keep that. It's not that hot down here for some reason. I don't know why that's the case.
What in the world?
Yep. Okay. And they finally about to get some rain. And officially, I think old James Spann said this is the longest stretch in October we've ever had with like no measurable amount of rain in the state of Alabama.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
hit them water holes, boys.
Yeah, if you got some there, man, me and Thomas, we found some creeks that I've never seen dry, and they are dry.
Man.
You go dig up a spot and put a kiddie pool out there. Just pump some water into it.
Yeah, a lot of my cameras have kind of gone dead. Just nothing really happening on them. But there, I put two new cameras out on the club the other day, and I put them out. It's not on our property, but on the adjoining property, like 100 yards off the line, there's a pond on the adjoining property.
You were on the adjoining property?
No, I was on the line.
Oh, okay.
I can see the pond, but it's got water in it, and it's surrounded by oaks. And on the property line, there's like a fire break that runs down it. That's on our property. And once you get onto ours, it's nothing but really, really thick pines. They've been thinned, but actually a bunch of beetle kill in there. And it's just really, really thick underneath. And I was like, I bet those deer are either funneling around that pond and coming back onto us, or they're just getting a drink from that pond and the oaks are probably dropping around it. So I went and walked that property line, and I found a pretty good scrape with the trail crossing the property line. And there's a barbed wire fence that runs the whole property line, like an old one that kind of goes through the woods. You know, it's like running through the middle of a bunch of trees. Mm-hmm. And there's a down section of it. And right there in that down section, there's a scrape and a good trail crossing. Put a camera there. Went down a little bit further, and there's another little down section of fence about 150 yards further. And I put a camera on that one, too, and like, bam, immediately started getting does on them. Almost every day, there's does walking back and forth. Does and a big old spike walking back and forth. So I don't know, maybe just because it's near water or it's just good habitat diversity. I don't know what it is, but I might sneak in there and maybe whack one of them does. I don't know. But anyways, that's been the extent of my success as far as, you know, locating daylight deer on trail camera, at least. Everything else, man. And it's kind of been like this over these last couple of years. It's different, you know, depending on where you live, but at least in our part of Alabama, central Alabama, it seems like every year the feed trees don't really get going good until about right now, about Halloween. And like I said, just this week they've really started to drop, it seems like on their own dropping, not squirrels or coons knocking them out, but like these trees are actually, you know, on their own dropping their mast. So now it's on, dude. Now I'm excited because it was getting a little aggravating there where it's like every single time I went out, I would walk really far and not find any feed sign. Mm-hmm. Other than just here and there, there would be a little bit. But now that the trees are actually dropping on their own, I feel like we're going to be able to hone in on some stuff. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited. It'll be an interesting couple weeks.
Yeah, we got a big hunt coming up. This is next week. We got an election next week, guys.
Yeah.
Listen now. Hey, get out there and vote.
That's right.
You know what sucks in Alabama? It sucks. I saw an article on this. We can't just totally sidetrack. They don't allow like any kind of early voting in Alabama. It's like, I mean, in person early voting, you can do the mail and everything. But I was like, man, because it'd be nice. Like,
I was about to say, because I voted early last time, because last election we were in Wyoming.
Yeah. Well, I just saw it today. I'm like, yeah, it'd be kind of nice, kind of knock that out beforehand and go hunt. But the, what was I going to say? Oh, Thomas got a giant.
Yeah, Thomas did get a giant on camera.
Thomas has a giant on camera. And I'm like, I hope and pray he can kill that deer.
Yep.
And he was just gigantic 10 point. And he was joking. I'm like, dude, you going to shoulder him out there? I mean, dude, looks like, as Travis Murray says, he looks like a bull yearling. I mean, giant neck, huge body. And what's funny is the deer that Anthony killed last year, we had trail cam photos of. And I think it was like all that big, and he ended up being like 140 inches.
And yeah. Oh, yeah. He gained some size on the ground.
Yeah.
Which doesn't usually happen.
No. And I'm like, I wonder if this deer is like just even bigger than I think he is. But he's huge. He's huge. Huge, huge, huge. And I told Thomas, I was like, anyways, I was talking to Thomas, I'm like, you going to shoulder mount that deer if you kill it? He's like, nah, I might. Because Thomas has been talking a lot about like just year mount deer now. He's like, nah, I'll probably year mount it. I'm like, I swear to you, if you kill that deer and year mount it, I would never forgive you.
Man, I just skullcap that deer.
Yeah. No, he was like, nah.
Throw him in the bone pile.
He's like, I'll probably get him. I probably would get him shoulder mounted. So hopefully he has success and kills that deer. That'd be such a big deer. Like that big tip. I mean, like what you imagine a giant southern giant. When I say giant, like over 150 inch deer, 10 point. Big, good brows, big G3s, big G4s, I mean, huge G2s, but it's like, his G4s are as big as my hand, almost. And I'm like, dude, go kill that deer. Please go kill that deer.
Please go kill that deer.
Go kill that deer so bad.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that earlier today, actually. I was going and looking back through some pictures that we had of some deer in the area I hunted this morning. And I was like, you know what? Like, what do you consider, for Alabama, what would you consider like, oh, that deer's a monster?
A monster?
A monster. Realistically.
I don't really use the term monster. Hammer.
Right, yeah, hammer. Giant. Whatever. Like,
I mean, to me, like.
Because I bet you're going to throw out a number that's too high.
Oh, you're probably right. I mean, probably like in that 140, early, like low 140 mark.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm right there with you. Like yeah. In Alabama, 140-inch deer is like.
Before we did this podcast, I didn't know a single person in Alabama who'd kill a deer over 135 inches.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I knew a bunch of guys, but nobody had ever killed one that big. Now, Anthony he killed Hightower not long ago, which was bigger than that. But before that, everybody knew biggest deer they'd kill is like in Alabama, at least, was like one low 130s probably.
Yeah.
But like I know a ton of people, and there's a lot of people across a bunch of states in the South who's never killed a 140. Like yeah. That is a big deer. That really, like when someone's like, oh, it's not a big, I'm sorry, you might live somewhere else, but like in the deep South, that is a huge deer.
Yes. Okay. All right. We're on the same page. Oh. I thought you were going to say like 150.
No.
Like 155 or 160.
No, dude. Especially that 8 point. If you like a couple of Jamie McKay's, like one of Jamie McKay's bucks last year, maybe both of them, because he had them both scored at the Weaver Meet big buck competition we had last year in February. And I think one of his was like, I think maybe low 140s is 8 point, and he's got this gigantic frame.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, dude, oh my God, that deer is huge. Huge.
Yeah, I hope Thomas gets that one. You said he could go 160, right?
I'm just going off what Anthony's deer was. Because when I saw Anthony's deer, I thought he was like.
When I saw it on trail camera, I was like, oh, that's a great deer.
I thought he was like.
But I was not.
No, I was thinking like he's high 120s or something. But it's the images we had of him was good, but they weren't great. And his body was so big, it actually made especially his mass.
Yeah.
And beyond, I mean, time length, you can tell time length, but like mass, you couldn't really tell. And his beams, like the angle we had him, you couldn't tell his beams all that well. But Anthony's deer last year was, I mean, a big deer. And this deer makes that deer look little. So I'm like, I don't know what he's going to be, but I feel very confident he's 155 plus inch 10 point.
Yeah. Well, at the club, old Steve ain't showed back up yet. Still, I was talking to Cody the other day about it. We're hoping that he didn't get shot on the side of the road or something. Of course, like I said, I'm pretty sure he did the same exact thing last year. So I think he'll show back up. But other than that, Mike has got a couple cameras out at the club where me and you squirrel hunted. And he has got this 8-point and this other, this like kind of funky 5-point we call patches, almost every single night on camera. And it'll be like 1 o'clock in the morning, midnight, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then there'll be one where it's like 6:30 a.m., you know, where they're coming through like real close to shooting light. Mm-hmm. And they're in there like, dude, it's like clockwork almost every single day. And I was telling Mike, that's where that feed tree was. And I was talking to him about it. And I was like, you know, they're, even though they're coming through there so late at night, I don't really think they're probably that far away. I don't think they're probably bedded that far away. And you just might not be getting them on camera. And I went back to the GPS studies that we looked at from Auburn, where these deer would be like up on a hill in a pine thicket or something, bedded down all day, and then they would go to like a hardwood bottom or a slough head or something like that at night, and they would be there like all night bouncing around within like a relatively small area. I'm like, that deer could be within 150, 200 yards of your camera for a very long time, and he just happens to walk in front of it at whatever random time. And I was thinking about it, and I'm like, did that actually kind of make sense? Because they're all over the map on times. It'll be like right after dark, middle of the night, right before daylight, you know, and it's just, it's not like they're always coming through at midnight. It's very scattered. I'm like, I bet they're freaking just hanging out in there.
Yeah.
You know? So we're going to see if we can figure out those deer. Dude, I hope Mike kills one of those deer. Hey, I'm like,
by the way, you know, you're talking about sometimes those deer come through at 6:30 in the morning.
Yep.
By the time this episode comes out, we are 3 days from my least favorite day of the year.
Oh, daylight savings or what?
It is so stupid. Lose an hour.
I hate it.
To me, it doesn't really, I don't really care about the afternoon hunt. You know, it's what it is, whatever. I hate it for the morning hunt because now it's going to get light at like 5:30.
Yep.
And the problem is, if you're hunting, I mean, no matter if you're hunting public, private, it doesn't matter. You gotta get up a little bit earlier, get out there, get all situated. But on public land, it really sucks because now you lose an hour of darkness that you had to ease into that spot or, you know, park at the gate at a reasonable time. Like you can get parked at 5 a.m., ease your way in there, get set up before daylight. It's great. When that happens, dude, you gotta be, especially you start getting some of these more popular hunts, and you're gonna get there at 4 a.m. 3:30, get parked.
I'm about to say 4 a.m. sounds a little late.
Yeah, 4 o'clock is late, but you know, 3:30 parked and start walking in.
Yeah,
just so like you know, you kind of have you know, maybe someone might come in on you, but a lot of times you park. At least Alabama people are pretty respectable in my opinion, except for that one guy that walked in on Andrew and me a couple years ago. He parked at the gate. That it was us and two other buddies. There was like four trucks already at the gate, but it was all of us, we're all kind of
said it's all God's country,
and he pulled it right next to it, and actually blocked the landowner's access to his property in order. Anyways, a long story, but
made a lot of people mad that
made a lot of people mad that day. But I ended up, I saw two good deer that day. You didn't see nothing because you got all hissy fit and went down in a little holler.
I did throw a bit of a hissy fit.
You could have shot one.
I'm man enough to admit it. Yep. I did,
but anyways, you just gotta get in earlier when the time falls back, which is just.
That's one reason that I went this morning. I wasn't planning on going this morning. Like me and Tiff were getting ready for bed last night, and I was looking at the wind, and I was looking at the weather over these next couple of days, and then I remembered that daylight savings is next week, and I was like, starting next week, instead of waking up at 4 o'clock, I'm going to have to wake up at 3 o'clock to get here. So I'm like, I'm just going to go ahead and go and enjoy this, you know? So, yeah. I mean, it was so nice. I woke up at 4 a.m. today. And I was out there. I was in my tree. And you know how long of a walk that is. I was in my tree for daylight. All was right in the world. And now I'm going to have to wake up at 3 o'clock to get back there. It sucks.
It is what it is. I mean, you know, whatever. Just take a short nap and then wake up and go hunt. That's how it is. I mean, especially December when we're hunting in a bunch of different places. I mean, it's like you're getting home late. Sleeping about 3.5 hours, 4 hours. You're waking up, going right back out there to do it again. And it's just like, oh, whatever. You know, sleep when you're dead.
It's all part of it,
just
man.
Don't sleep in your stand. That one thing, listen, I'll tell you. That method saddle, Latitude method saddle, I've never slept in the saddle before. Never. I probably could with that one.
Yep.
Which is a problem. That's one thing I kind of like about saddle hunting. It's one of those things that, like, I never could get so set up and just comfortable, especially sitting to the tree, where I felt like I could fall asleep, which is great because that means you're more aware. Like, hey, you're looking around. Because back when I was using a climber, like before I started using log, like 10 years ago or over 10 years ago when I was using a climber a lot exclusively, dude, I'd fall asleep all the time. And I like, I don't know how many deer walked by. Mm. Have no idea. But yep. Now it's like, you know, I could play pun on the phone and a deer come by and, you know, screw the pooch. That's happened. But, you know, not falling asleep's kind of a benefit.
Yep.
You got to climb out of the tree and just go like sleep next to your, take a nap next to your tree. You know, set a vibrate alarm or something, you know, to go off in like 45 minutes, wake up, climb back up in the tree. Or just wake up to a deer blown at you from like 25 yards away.
Yeah, actually, I've never hunted, when it comes to saddle hunting, I've never hunted with like knee pads before. And my knee pads came in from Latitude and I hunted with them this morning. That was nice.
Dude, it's the way to go.
It was real nice.
It's like, I used to make fun of people using knee pads because I'm like, I would lean all the time. Or like
the jokes write themselves.
Yeah, I would just lean. I wouldn't sit down in the saddle, and then finally I got some knee pads, started using them. I'm like, dude, this is amazing. I can sit here, get all comfortable. You know.
Yep.
You sound like Thomas right now.
Anyways. Yeah. All right. Cool. What else we got coming up? We got a big hunt coming up next week, which is going to be fun. Any other updates? We're getting ready for Kansas.
Yeah, that's coming quick.
Yeah, it's coming.
You know where
quick.
Your tags are?
No,
that's gonna be a problem.
There's some. I mean, I don't know, they're somewhere.
You better find it. I know where mine are at, but I was like, I bet you Andrew lost his. So yeah, get ready for Kansas. I'm really excited about that because we are going a little bit like mid November. Hopefully by that time we have a little bit of a cold front.
I was about to say, yeah, because now we can see the extended forecast, and it's always weird to me. Like this time of year always sneaks up on me because, you know, we're still so far removed from the rut right now where we live. Like it's not even really a thought. And I see everybody else on Facebook, and they're just like, they're like, oh, they're trailing does, you know, like, oh, this is happening. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's like the rut in the Midwest right now.
Yeah, Jacob Emery made a post. Again, by the time this episode came out, it was even more a couple days ago, but he made a post maybe yesterday. He was like, man, we're like 4 days, maybe it was today. He's like, we're 4 days away from the best month of the year for deer hunters. And I'm like, okay.
I'll take it or leave it.
I'm like, we go to Kansas, yeah, but like outside of that, I'm like, yeah, it's good, but it's not like prime time down here for a lot of what we hunt. So
yeah,
it's still early season for us.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the cool thing. If you live down south, I'll use Alabama for example. Mississippi is kind of like this, a lot part of Mississippi. Georgia's so hit or miss because a lot of Georgia is like, some of it, like northern Georgia, ruts later in the year. But if you live in like Alabama, Mississippi, or like Louisiana, for example, and your rut is that December, January timeframe, you could actually, if you have the time, the money, and the support from Jordan's episode last week, those three things, to be able to leave and go hunt out of state, like you can do it. And really, unless you just love hunting early season or have a great pattern, you think you can kill a buck early, you're not missing any like pre-rut rutting activity if you go and travel during November, which is pretty cool. Again, being down south, it's kind of like opposite. Like you see guys doing that in the Midwest and they're jumping from state to state and they're kind of like rushing because, you know, back home they're starting to rut, but they're trying to travel and hunt. I'm like, I don't have to worry about none of that down here.
Well, no, I was telling Mike too, because Mike's getting ready to go to Arkansas with Thomas in a couple weeks, and he's going to be rut hunting up there. And I was telling him it's great to go do that because, one, you get that more Midwest type rut experience. You're getting to go hunt the rut in November somewhere and get tuned up and go and have a good time, have an awesome trip. But when you come back, you're basically, if you want to, in Alabama, you're rut hunting for the whole rest of the season. I was like, when we go to Kansas, we will be hunting rutting deer until we decide to quit hunting, which is usually, you know, late January.
People understand that. They're like, they don't rut that long.
No, they don't rut that long. But we, within a two-hour drive of the house, we've got different ruts, essentially, here in Alabama, where I can drive 2 hours this way and be on one rut, and I can drive a couple hours that way and be in a different one. So, you know, I'll have a spot that I hunt in late November, early December. I'll have a spot that I hunt mid to late December, and then I've got two different spots to hunt in January. I'll have different ruts and just chase it around. So it's pretty fun, exciting.
Not first rut, second rut.
No, like we have rut.
Like, if anybody doesn't understand what we're saying, I'm going to say this is probably – love y'all YouTubers. I give the YouTube audience a lot of crap, but y'all are fun. But some of the YouTube people, like, they're like, that's not possible. And you go on Google, DuckDuckGo, whatever you want to use. Bing. I don't care. And search the Alabama rut map and look at what our DCNR put together. Probably, I don't know, the first one probably came out, I don't know, 10 years ago maybe.
Yep.
And look at all the different peak ruts in the state. And it's based off, and we did an episode on this, a little restocking, kind of how they moved deer around and stuff like that. And you can chase the rut in Alabama. There's five distinct different ruts in Alabama if you're willing to chase it.
Yep.
And some of it, it's a county split in half.
Yep.
By like over a month and a half.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen people talk about that map online, you know, like, and be like, oh, you know, I hunt here. I don't think it's real accurate. I don't know. I've hunted all up and down the state, and everywhere that I've personally hunted, that map is dead on.
Yep.
And you just got to understand that that map is peak conception dates. So, meaning most of the does are being bred during that date range that it's giving you. So, if you're the kind of guy who is interested in the lockdown period of the rut, that's essentially that date range you're getting on that map is the lockdown, right? So, your better hunting is going to be a couple days on the front and tail end of what that date range is giving you. So, for instance, if it says that your peak conception is January, like 10th through the 15th, then that very first week of January is probably going to be really, really, really good. So just keep that in mind. You know, if you're thinking about traveling around, you know, if you live in Alabama, or if you're thinking about coming to Alabama, and you look at that map, that's just something to be aware of. And I've seen similar maps for Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, and Louisiana. And also actually Onyx has a southern heat map, southern rut heat map. So you can go on Onyx on your Elite membership and you can pull up that layer and zoom in and it'll tell you where the peak rut dates are. And same thing with that one, very accurate. So you can check that out, help you plan your trips.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of anything else. Got a lot of stuff. Mine's kind of fried. I spent way too much time on the computer yesterday editing videos, but hopefully y'all been enjoying the podcast clips, the video podcast, the audio podcast, the shorts, the reels, all that kind of stuff, because we're putting a lot of time into it. But it's been fun to kind of see how everything's kind of paying off, just how you guys are enjoying it, leaving comments, liking, you know, feedback on stuff. It's really cool to kind of see that. So got a lot more stuff coming and really trying to plan out more of our content moving into January and kind of February time frame, because we're pretty much done main episodes for the rest of the year, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so we got to start recording 2025 stuff.
So, listen, let me put this out there. We have a contact form on our website, thesouthernoutdoorsman.com. If you have a guest, someone, or like, if you have somebody in mind that you think would be a great guest in the podcast somewhere in the Southeast, they might be outside of Southeast. We might make a trip for them. But for us to do an in-person podcast with, write those in on our contact form, or what's it called?
Yes, contact form.
Contact form on the website. Again, thesouthernoutdoorsman.com. You know, submit, give us, you know, let us know a name. You know, area of the country they live in, state, town, all that kind of stuff. If you got a contact number, great. And just kind of reasoning why you think they'd be a great guest. And we'll kind of, you know, vet some of those out and try to figure out, you know, who do we want to get on kind of moving forward for 2025. So love to kind of get some feedback because, listen, Joey Metch.
Oh, yeah.
He came from a listener. Gavin, you the man. Okay. So, again, like, pretty much all of our Louisiana guys that we got came from, like, guys like Gavin, listeners like Gavin and a couple other guys. So if you have anybody that you want to see on the show, recommend them, and we'll take it pretty seriously, check them out, and try to see, you know, what all we can do. By the way, I'll put a shout out. If you know some people in Louisiana, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Mississippi, maybe even Arkansas.
East Texas
boys, you out there, I know y'all listen to this podcast or watch it. Let us know. Again, write us in. Don't send us a DM on social media, because they get lost. I'll be 100% honest. Again, use the contact form on our website, thesouthernoutdoorsman.com. Get that submitted, and we'll check them out. So appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. Already looking forward to that. Hey, if you've got turkey recommendations too, we're looking to knock out some turkey episodes ahead of time. So
they're not going
to
drop early.
They're not going to drop early.
They're not going to drop right now.
We're going to record in January, drop in March.
Yeah. So anyway. Other than that, appreciate everybody watching the podcast, listen to the podcast. Andrew, you got anything else?
That's all I got, man. Okay. Watch out for the grunt calls. Go join the email list or Patreon. Don't miss out on them. This is the last run. So y'all better get in on them.
Yep, absolutely. So appreciate y'all watching. Appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. We'll catch you back here on the next episode of the Southern Outdoors. And remember, guys, y'all stay safe.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the Deep South when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.